What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This podcast is part of the How We Are Network. For information on this episode and many other like-minded shows, visit howweare.org. That's howweare.org.
Greetings all. Welcome to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I'm your host, Ray Harkins. Thank you for joining me again. This week, we have a guest that goes by the name Sasha Dunnable. You think I would learn its name, but I never do. I always forget. I just know him as Sasha. He is the guitarist, lead vocalist of a band called Intronaut, and more on him in a minute. Got a lot of random stuff I want to get out of the way, talk to you guys about before we talk to Sasha. First and foremost, there is a musical compilation that is out right now that I am very, very excited to tell you about. Basically, I work part-time for a label called No Sleep Records. Some of you may have heard of it. Some of you probably have no idea what it is. Regardless, the owner slash one of my best friends, Chris Hansen, his mother recently passed away. He incurred a lot of costs in regards to, because there's so much stuff that you honestly don't consider when someone passes away. The logistics of it, which sounds so cold and businesslike and harsh, but it's true. So it's like, you know, stuff getting stuck in probate, like property. And anyways, needless to say, there's a lot of unexpected bills and stuff that Chris has to take on because he has no siblings. His father is not around because he passed away. And so Chris is having to shoulder a lot of this burden. Anyway, so what he did is he put together a really cool compilation on No Sleep Records with bands like Balance of Composure, Law Dispute. Basically, everybody who's cool in independent music currently probably has contributed something to this compilation. And there's a ton of previous guests that have contributed to this compilation as well. So just go to nosleeprecords.com or Google A Comp for Mom, No Sleep Records, something like that. It's super, super limited vinyl, and there's also digital downloads. But I wanted to get that word out there because, I mean, the vinyl's almost sold out, but it's a cause that I personally obviously believe in. It's not even a cause. It's just basically helping people out. And when I say people, it's like our community. We have to stick close together. regardless of musical factions and like, oh, I don't like that band or I don't like that label. When a person has dedicated their lives to being creative and putting something out there and putting themselves out there, such as my friend Chris has done with his label, No Sleep, you want to give back. NoSleepRecords.com, pick up that comp. I've also been thinking of doing a segment, or I don't know if it's like a monthly show or once every 2 or 3 months, because a lot of people email me in regards to sort of like music industry questions and chatter. Honestly, there's a lot of other podcasts that are doing that right now. A lot of friends are talking about, you know, really deep dive into music industry stuff. And it just got me thinking where it's like, I've done this for most of my adult and teenage life in regards to either being in a band or working at a record label. Like, honestly, the only thing I can't give you any sort of advice on is college radio. I don't know anything about that. But most other avenues of the music industry, I have some experience with. So anyways, I don't know. You tell me. If you think this is an interesting idea, like every couple months, where it's just like, all right, here's like a little 20-minute bonus episode about this particular thing, whether it's like how to tour properly or whatever. It's like, I don't even want to make it sound like some sort of advice column, because, you know, I by no means am a definitive source for a lot of this stuff, but I just feel that sharing the experiences that I have had helps. I mean, because that's the only way that I learn stuff is by looking at other people and being like, what'd you do? Oh, you screwed up that. Okay, cool. I'm going to see if I can not do that. So anyways, just putting it out there. If you like the idea, email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter, 100wordspodcast. And interact that way. People have donated, and that is absolutely incredible. I want to give a special shout out to my dude, Troy Kenny. He came along not too long ago, like maybe about 3 or 4 months ago. He started listening to the show, super into it, and he decided to be a monthly contributor, and I cannot thank him enough. Your package is on the way, my friend. And thank you. If you want to donate to the show, visit the podcast, 100wordspodcast.com. On the right side, you'll see a donate button, because, I mean, this thing's for free for you. It costs me money to produce. I know every podcast tells you that, and I get it. It's a reality. But, you know, I pay Tom, our producer, out of my own pocket because I believe he does amazing work. If you want to help make that easier for me and ultimately improve the show, because what I want to do is I want to turn this into its own self-sustaining thing where it's like, hey, that would be rad if I flew out to Chicago for a few days and just kind of made the rounds, did a bunch of interviews. Like, that would be so much fun. And I know that I would get great content out of it. So anyways, I'm spiraling off. If you want to donate to the show, you can do that. You can also review the show on iTunes. That makes the show cooler and more appealing to advertisers. So do that. And then, so let's talk about Sasha. I've known him for a long time. Him and I used to work together at Century Media Records, and we also used to be label mates because Intronaut started off their musical career on a label called Goodfellow Records. And Sasha's always been just like this soft-spoken, really cool, laid-back dude that likes a ton of music. He's definitely not the guy that I look at where it's like, oh yeah, he's the metal guy or he's the punk guy. It's like, no, he's just like a heavy music aficionado. And Intronaut is such a good band at what they do and how they've progressed from just kind of like a sort of, you know, B-rate Mastodon into this their own musical entity that is Intronaut. And it's hard to classify them at this point. They just have so many different textures and such a good band. If you like heavy music, you should probably check out Intronaut. Anyways, here's my discussion with Sasha. We hung out over Skype one morning, and here's what happened. I usually start these things off with just like my own personal kind of entry point to you. I was thinking, I'm like, you are the type of person where it's like, we've known each other for so long, but I would never be able to be like, oh yeah, that's right. I met Sasha in 2001. I have no, like, because I think we met each other prior to working at Century Media, right? Like together? Or was that the first like real interaction?
I remember you from Bionic Records.
Okay.
Which was definitely, I think probably before you worked there. I might've worked there already, but.
Wait, you worked at Bionic?
No, before I worked at Century, I mean.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was like, wait a minute.
No.
Have you been following me throughout my random jobs?
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's where I remember you from.
Do you find it weird when it's like when you have been doing like music stuff for so long that there are certain people where it's like they just exist? Like you're like, they've existed in my life for 15 years. I think there's so many other areas in life that it just doesn't. People are so able to point to like, oh, I met this guy is my high school friend, or this guy is my, you know, friend I met in college. But I think in music, it's such a weird conglomeration of memories that you're just like, oh yeah, these people I've just known for like half my life, and yeah. I don't know where.
Like, there's a guy who works at Home Depot over by my house here that I see all the time. That was in bands that like I knew probably coming up on like 20 years ago, you know, going like seeing at like punk shows or whatever. And now he's like works at the lumber department at Home Depot, and it's always like, yo, what's up, dude? It's like fucking played the PCH with you like in 97, you know?
Dude, that's so, yeah. And then when you run across a person like that in a different context, like in real life, you know, it's always weird because you're like, I'm trying to place it. And then you're like, oh, that's right. Yeah, we played a terrible show together in 97.
Right, yeah.
I just find it so interesting within music how that always kind of, you know, happens. And especially you, because you've traveled, you've done so many random different things within music, whether that is like working at a record label, playing in a band, obviously now what you're doing with making guitars. Is it weird for people that come up to you and have different entry points for knowing you, whether it's like, hey, I remember your first band, or hey, I only know you from this one thing. Is it weird for you to kind of be like, oh, that I guess I have done a lot of random stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. They all kind of run together, I think, from like the Century Media days. I mean, I was at Century Media like 6 years, so like there's a lot of people from that. But then it's just like you see those people at shows, and then you like see them at shows that you play, and they come to your, I don't know, like it all kind of runs together, I think.
Yeah, one melting pot.
They're all the same kind of person to me, like in my head, you know? Just all like people from the music world, from the metal music world, you know? It's like there's there's a lot of those people, but just there's not a lot of variation in my mind, you know, to like separate any of them, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, I could see that, especially it's like when you are kind of drawing those distinct lines between, especially musical genres, where it's like, I've always found it weird. Like people that don't go to shows outside the context of whatever music they kind of adhere to, whether it's like, you know, whatever. I define myself as a hardcore kid, even though I'm, you know, a grown ass man and I shouldn't call myself a kid anymore. But at the same time, it's like, obviously, you know, I would go to shows that don't, you know, I'm not going to a Bane show every time they come through. I can go to other things. And I find it so strange where it's like people, they're like, they section that off where it's like, okay, well, this is the one style of show that I'm going to go to and not open themselves up. I mean, you strike me as the type of person that's clearly, as long as it's kind of heavy, you're into it in some capacity and you've kind of filtered through scenes, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I guess I've sort of explored a lot of different things, and I don't like define myself as one or subscribe to one sort of sub, genre of music or scene or whatever, especially at this point. If you're doing that in your 30s, like, come on, man.
You can identify yourself as such, but like if that's like a primary concern in your life, you are doing something wrong.
Yeah, open it up a little bit, you know.
Where were you born and raised? Were you raised in Southern California?
Yeah, I was born in San Diego, actually, and I lived there. It's kind of a complicated story. My parents got divorced when I was like 2 or something, you know, like really young. Like, I don't remember them being together. Mm-hmm. And then my mom moved to LA. She got remarried and moved to LA when I was probably 4 or 5. They kept the joint custody thing. So it ended up that I went to school during the week in San Diego and would come to Los Angeles on weekends. Like, high school came around and I was pretty much just in LA. Like, I went to high school in LA. You know, I sort of identify with both cities, but I kind of think of myself as more of a Los Angeles person than a San Diego person.
Yeah. Was that by choice that you ultimately ended up going to school in LA, or was that just kind of a function of the design of the family?
I made the decision. I started high school in San Diego. I went to a private Catholic, like, elementary and middle school, like the same school for 9 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to this private Catholic high school, which was kind of like the next school that you that everybody kind of went to or whatever. And I just, I don't know, at some point I just decided I wanted to come up to LA. It was just like, I think my dad moved to like this different house in San Diego. It was like kind of in a crappier area, Claremont. Mm. Which is, I don't know if you know San Diego at all, but
I do. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So Claremont, I don't know. We lived in Pacific Beach my whole life. And then he went to Claremont and it was just kind of, I don't know. And this new school, and I was like taking the bus there and just kind of not really feeling it, I think.
Yo, Dad, why'd you downgrade?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it, yeah, it's hard to like know, to know exactly what was going through my mind. But
yeah,
like I would come up here. My mom lived in like Santa Monica. It was like, man, this looks like so much nicer.
It was probably more exciting up there too.
Yeah, that, yeah, that too, I guess. I don't know. It just, it was time for a change probably. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and especially, I mean, it sounds like obviously the you know, elementary school and junior high and all that stuff, you were probably cloistered in a way because it was, you know, public schools, I mean, or, you know, there's a huge distinction between private, you know, a private Catholic school and then obviously like a public high school.
Yeah.
And if you don't experience one or the other, it seems so, seems like it makes sense just if you're saying it, where it's like, oh yeah, there's a huge difference between the two, but not until you experience both is when it's like, oh my God, like this couldn't be more different.
Yeah. It was, it's insane. The difference. I mean, like the private school thing, I mean, I don't know how all of them work, but mine was like, you're pretty much in the same, you have the same class of like 30 people, you know, some come and go or whatever, but for like 9 years, you just have the same classmates, you know, for all of your schooling, or whatever. And then, like, I come to public school up in LA to a school where there's like 4,000 students. It's like so different, you know. Like,
right.
I mean, public school in LA coming from private small Catholic school in San Diego, like night and day.
Did you did you struggle with the assimilation within that?
I don't think so. I think it was all right. I kind of, I mean, at the end of the day, I probably preferred the bigger public school. You could be like more anonymous probably, you know, and like, it's more real world, you know, it's like really like prepping you for the real world. Whereas like, if you're at some small school, I don't know if you're really getting that as much, you know?
No, for sure. I mean, I definitely, I went through private schools my entire life, mostly due to my mom just wanting to keep me at a, you know, she was a teacher herself. So she was always like small class sizes were of vital importance to her. But I was on the flip side in regards to like, I looked at my friends that went to public high schools and like, they fucking hated it. And I was like, dude, I love my high school. Like I liked, but at the same time, it was because I was also, you know, it's like, once you start to kind of like play in bands and see the world that way, you don't feel like you're, you know, missing out, like you're saying, on that sort of like real world experience where you feel like you're just kind of in your, oh yeah, I got my 10 people and this is kind of what I do at this school and that's it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Were your parents musical at all?
No, not really at all. My dad like owned records and I mean, nothing huge, you know, but there was no like really ultra musical people in my family at all. Mm-hmm. Very casual music listeners, definitely no music players. You know,
right? Yeah. What did they do for work?
Well, my dad kind of did a lot of things. He ended up working for the city of San Diego. He's retired now, but before that, he owned a few, like a small chain of 1 hour photos, like 1 hour photo shops. You know, remember those?
Sure, I do remember those. Yeah, yeah.
Totally irrelevant now, or obsolete now, I guess. And then he also did like, actually, I guess this is kind of musical. He had like a pair like maintenance business for like organs, like church organs, you know, like he,
oh, yeah,
or like electric organ, any kind of organ. He could just, I guess he would fix it.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
So I remember, like, going, as a kid, we'd go to, like, churches, you know. It'd be, like, 2 days of going to, like, 20 churches and tuning up the organ or whatever.
Jobs like that are so – they blow my mind because it's, like, not only is it such a specific, practice and talent to do that, but yeah. Then it's, like, you know, essentially you have the corner in the market where it's, like, dude, you only need one or two people that do that in, like, Southern California. Like, you know, there's right. Such a there's such this weird, you know, supply and demand thing where it's like, oh, dude, we don't need a third person that repairs organs down here. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's only so many organs.
Yeah, for sure. I just always find jobs like that so so compelling where it's just like, yeah, I think this is what I'll do. It's like, all right, go for it.
Yeah. Like, how did you get into that? And how did you, like, rise to the top of that whole, you know, business?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. What'd your mom do?
When I was younger, she worked, like, for a bank, which is how she met my stepdad. But then she ended up, like, going back to school and she became she's a registered dietitian. She still works. Or actually, I think she just quit working for the Santa Monica Malibu school district. She was, like, the nutrition consultant for, like, the school cafeterias and all that. And then she teaches at Santa Monica College also, like a nutrition class, I think. Or
yeah.
Whatever the class is called. I don't know. But she teaches how to be healthy.
And I forget, do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have two half-brothers, one from each of my parents' remarriages, like two younger half-brothers who are not brothers themselves.
Right. Yeah, total mixed bag family.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Are they, how much younger or older are they to you?
The one from my mom's second marriage is 6 years younger than me, so he would be 26. Awesome kid. He's like a total adventurer. Like, he lived in, like, Ecuador for a couple years working for, like, a flower farm, you know. They, like, farm roses and, like, ship them to, you know, the US. Sure. I don't know. Now he was in New York. He was working at some company in Malibu doing, like, marketing for, I forget the guy's name, but the Wolf of Wall Street.
Like, oh,
he was,
yeah,
going out to dinner with that guy, you know, like, just
crazy.
Getting some crazy shit done, I'm sure.
Right.
And then my other brother lives in San Diego. He's like 10 years younger than me. He's just hanging out there.
Yeah, there's more of a divide there. So, you know, there it probably gave you little time to actually develop a relationship with him.
Yeah, like when we lived together, he was like a baby, you know?
Yeah. And, yeah.
Or a small child.
And so as you started to go kind of through your high school experience, you know, what kind of kid did you find yourself being during that time? You know, is that when independent music started to kind of infiltrate your world, or were you, a sports dude? What'd you find yourself doing?
I was into sports like earlier. Like I played ice hockey from age like 5 to probably 16 or 17.
Oh, wow.
My mom's Canadian, so like my uncle played ice hockey. Like I just got into it like super early on, and I just kept doing it.
Well, you kind of have to if you're Canadian.
Yeah, everybody fucking plays hockey. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was way into that for a long time. But like as far as the music thing, like independent music, you know, that was probably like around when I moved to LA and like going to a public school, meeting other guys my age, you know, who were into like punk, you know, because I was like kind of casually into like some punk stuff, you know, in eighth or ninth grade. But then again, like being in a small school, like I just didn't have that many, you know, peers really to like seek stuff out with. This is like before the internet kind of also.
Right.
You know? And so coming to LA like and meeting other kids who were into like punk, you know, then we found like record stores and like, you know, through that you find out about shows. So I'd say like ninth or 10th grade was like big into like discovering all of that.
Well, and what was the stuff that you started to unpeel during that time?
Well, I remember, that was like when, like at first, you know, went from like Black Flag, you know, like Circle Jerks, that whole like old punk stuff. And then like, probably like most people, you know, we started just trying to find the next most extreme thing, you know, like, you know, bands that played faster, you know, crazier shit. And all of this you had to do just by like buying the record. You know, we'd like buy 7 inches. We'd go to, it was when Headline Records, I don't know if do you know that store?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He was like brand new at this time and he was over in Westwood and we were all in like Santa Monica, like, or just on the West Side. So it was like, we just discovered that place like skateboarding by one day. And then like all of a sudden we were just there every day, you know, spending, you know, a couple bucks on like a new 7-inch or something, you know? So you just like try to find, ask him for recommendations and like, you know, like the sort of more traditional punk stuff turned into like not quite metal, like I guess more like the Power Violent stuff. Like that was all big, you know, then like mid late 90s, you know, like Spaz and
Charles Bronson, stuff like that.
Yeah. Just any of that stuff, like kind of all over it.
Well, and you also, I always remember my, I don't really know where I got this, but there's just the economy of, like you were saying, a 7-inch where it's like, oh, like I can buy that because that's like, you know, $350.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh dude, there's like 16 songs on here. Like what a deal.
It was a fucking bargain. So yeah, that was kind of it. And then, you know, through that, you know, there'd be like flyers for shows and we'd just go check out shows on the weekend, like anything that was going on, which in LA or like Southern California was kind of, there was nothing really on our side of town. So we'd have to like travel, which would seem like a long ways back then, to either like the Valley, or there's a lot of backyard shows in like East LA, like the PCH Club was happening then. And eventually, I guess, Chain Reaction, when it was like Public Storage and then Chain Reaction or whatever.
I love how at Chain Reaction they still have in the tile there, it says PS, like when you first walk in there.
Oh really?
Like if you, yeah, which I'm like, that's great, they keep that. But like no one that's younger than, you know, 28 knows that.
Yeah, right. Was it actually a Public Storage?
No, like it was so stupid because I remember I definitely I played there when it was a coffee shop. Like I don't even know why they did this, but it was like they had coffee tables set up like where they have the pit, you know?
Yeah.
So it was like a foot between the coffee table and the front of the stage. So it's like there's nowhere for a person to stand. And it's like, you know, it's like I played there with like Indecision. So it's like, who the fuck is going to go to a hardcore show? Like, it was the worst setup, and I mean they quickly realized that, but
right.
Yeah, it was never ever a Public Storage, which is just like they just pulled that out of nowhere. Yeah, and I think they quickly found out that if my memory serves me right, I think they got sued or cease and desist, where it's like you can't name yourself that.
Yeah, because they were using like the logo. It was like, I feel like it looked like it should have been a storage place.
Right, like there is a national chain of public storage places.
Right.
What are you doing?
Let's just put up a club and call it like Nike or something, you know?
Yeah. Hey, why don't you show up here? It's network called Nike. I think there's an interesting nugget in there in regards to there was that weird time where it was like, you know, like you were saying, backyard shows, clubs. When I use the word club very loosely, like the PCH club was a prime example of like, no, like that should have never existed from like it just was a place to show up. I think the biggest thing was the fact that it was consistent, where it's like, okay, we've got enough shows going on to where people know how to get there. They know that they shouldn't park their cars in the streets, like all these these rules of engagement. But it's like, you know, it was never meant to be a place to like have as many shows as they probably did, you know?
It was just like a room in the middle of like nowhere. Like, I don't
totally
even, like, what the hell was that place before it was that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I think it was. And do you remember they had like the bathroom that was there? They had, it was like, there was like a pigeon farm or something. That was like, do you remember that?
Hind it or something?
You could actually hear, like, if you went to the bathroom, you could actually, like, hear birds, like, cooing, like, the pigeons. Yeah. Like, and I don't think they were always necessarily there, but some shows it would just be like, dude, this is fucking weird. There's, like, there's bird shit in the bathroom. I don't know why.
I just remember it being really weird. There was, like, an oil refinery on one side, a big, like, truck wash, and then, like, just like weird ghetto like neighborhood right there. I mean, it, like, none of that's even there now. Like, I remember being in that area, and they built, it's like a freeway like on ramp now, like that whole block.
Those places that start up and do shows, like if those places last for like over 2 years, there's such a touchstone of like so many people of that, you know, 3 to 5 year range are just like, oh, the PCH club, and they have such fond memories of it. And it's like, well, if you actually looked at it, it was a dump, clearly.
Well, it was all about the shows that happened there that
right.
had a lot of like really like legendary bands played in that little shitty ass room.
When are you going to see Isis and Cave-In play there? And it's like, oh, to 150 people. It's like, are you kidding? It's ridiculous. And so you're, you know, as you started to seek out shows and start to, you know, become more active in that, did that pretty much immediately swallow you up as far as like, you know, once you started to watch bands, did you immediately want to start one?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to start a band when I started playing guitar, which was like when I was like 10, like I was always all about playing music, but, yeah, probably like just seeing bands doing that, like probably sort of, it sort of showed me, you know, how it's done, I guess, you know, like you'd go to shows like that and see bands come through from like other cities or like, you know, and you just see like, oh, you, this is how bands do this. They get in a van and drive to a city and play a show and have like shirts for sale and stuff. It kind of just showed me how done, I guess, and like made it seem a lot more, like a possibility, I guess. And that was probably, you know, super, I don't know, just like seeing a lot of bands then that like kind of like the more underground side of things, it was like a lot more, it just seemed cooler and more exciting and like more inspiring in a way to see bands like Dystopia or things like that, that were like truly like great bands in like small clubs. And I don't know, it was just then like going and seeing, you know, just some sort of like some bigger punk show, you know, like in Hollywood or something. I don't know. It just seemed cooler, I guess, you know?
I totally, I did like you saying that really like it jogs some memories in me where it's like some of the most, you know, I guess like inspirational bands that, you know, are completely lost to history. Bands like, you know, Suicide Nation and UNRWA and Creationist Crucifixion. Uh-huh. It's like those bands, like not only did they have an agenda, but like they were like really, really talented at what they did.
Yeah.
And it was, it does kind of break, like it mentally breaks down that barrier, you know, you maybe set up in your head when you're a kid of just like, oh, well, yeah, you're in this, you know, whatever crappy venue and like, you know, there's like no one here. And it's like, oh no, but there's some real shit going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of, it forces you to like reckon with it as a kid trying to understand like, oh yeah, I guess you don't need to play at the, you know, the Roxy or the Troubadour to be like quote unquote good.
Yeah. I mean, it's just much, it's that much more intense, I guess, you know, like when there's, like you said, like an actual like talented band doing something like pretty innovative in like a weird, like place that might as well be someone's garage.
Yeah.
Like it's just that much more intense and like, I don't know, just impressive and inspiring.
That really keys people onto things, and that just makes you, you know, dedicated to it for longer than just like 6 months and moving on.
Right, right. Yeah.
So what was the first band that you actually played in? Was that Anubis, or was that something prior to that?
No, the first band was, it was called The Dregs, and it was our punk band in like ninth grade.
That's good though.
I mean, we weren't very good. Like, we kind of got better, you know, as we went along. I mean, it was literally like us learning how to play music, you know.
Right.
Like, our drummer, who's still, you know, one of my best friends, like, got his drum set, and we like played a show a week later at our first show at Headline Records in Westwood.
That's perfect. You had no business playing a show, but you did.
Yeah. And it was, you know, and that's just how it went. You know, we kind of like learned how to play music together and grow into your musical abilities that way.
Yeah. Were you a Liberty Spike Mohawk punk rock kid?
Yeah. Well, at first, definitely, you know, when you're first getting into that stuff, it's like, or at least for me, I was first getting, I was just like all about it. You know, I just loved all that, you know, the music as well as just like the whole aesthetic of like punk, you know, it was just fun. But I don't know, like after, you know, maybe a year or so, kind of mellowed out on that. It was just a lot of maintenance involved in a look like that, you know.
No, it's true. It's like the amount of effort that it takes to be like, well, I don't really need to prove this to anybody anymore because people kind of know what I'm into now.
Yeah, did by your, like 15 or 16, I was like, all right, I don't really need to slags here.
Did your how did your parents start to react when you started to get into this like clearly you know, underground subculture stuff? It was like, oh, Sasha is like clearly gone off the deep end.
Yeah, I don't think they liked it at all. Actually, no, they didn't.
How did they try to prevent it?
Or did they
just kind of let you go your own way, so to speak?
They let me do what I wanted to do, you know, more or less. But it was just a lot of like, you know, checking in. I mean, it's, you know, I'm the oldest kid, you know, my mom's never had a kid before. And it's like, oh, hey, I'm just going to go, I'm 15 and I'm going to go with my friends on the bus to East LA and watch some bands like in a backyard over there. It's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like,
yeah, that's okay, a great idea.
Yeah, just call me every half hour and let me know what's going on, you know, or like, you know, there was a lot of like breaking her in to that kind of stuff for sure.
And so when you I presume as you started to kind of go through school, did you because you strike me as the type of person that's always like, you're practical in your approach in regards to the fact that I presume you never were like, okay, I am going to like make a living off of the band that I play in, you know, like that. It seems like all the stuff that you've done ever since has been kind of like, oh, I try to structure my life around the fact that I always want to play music, and whatever that really takes, I'll kind of do.
You know, that's actually pretty accurate, because I mean, you know, I've never had any like, you know, delusion about being able to actually make like a real living from playing weird heavy metal, you know, or whatever. That doesn't mean I've always made the smartest life decisions either, like as far as like trying to get to a place where I can like sustain myself while, you know, doing music,
right,
as more a hobby.
Well, did you have like, were you basically like, I'm going to finish high school and I'm just going to like get a job? Like, did you have any, you know, academic aspirations?
No. And like, I didn't apply myself really at school. Like, if school by like, you know, I'd say like 10th, 11th grade, like I just did not even care about it. Like, I just hate it. I mean, I didn't like hate it. I just didn't want to be there, you know? So I never like had a plan. I was always kind of like sort of just, I was unwise in a lot of those decisions, you know, back then. Because I just didn't know what I wanted to do, you know, like I didn't really care about anything except for like, you know, music and, you know, I mean, I always like our family traveled a lot, you know, I was like into traveling, but I just never like saw myself doing any one particular like job or like career path or anything like that. It was always like, I just never really had any plan. So high school, I basically like almost failed out of it because I just never even went, which was just also did not go over very well at home.
Right.
but I figured it out, you know, like I ended up graduating high school and like went to, you know, I went to Santa Monica College right out of high school, like having no idea what I'm doing, you know, just sort of like going and like not doing very well, eventually just giving it up. Then I got, I think it was just like, it was while I was like fresh out of high school, I got an internship at Metal Blade Records.
Yep.
Kind of just fell into my lap. EJ Joe Hankin, who is now Intronaut's manager,
right,
also owns Prosthetic Records, was the publicist at Metal Blade at the time, and like got in touch with one of my friends somehow, just because he like saw him on the street or something like that, wearing like a metal shirt, and was just like, if you want to like ever come intern for Metal Blade, just let me know. And like, I think for some reason he couldn't do it, and he just like hit me up and was like, this guy needs an intern up at the metal label. And I was like, that sounds awesome. Like, I'll totally do that.
Right.
So that was kind of cool. And I guess that was sort of the start of something, because I, from there, ended up going to work at Century Media, just like meeting people at Century Media, got a job over there.
And right.
Worked there for 6 years, you know.
Right, right. Yeah. So it kind of get you like, I presume you probably didn't have a thought to be like, oh, I need to work at a record label. It was just kind of like this mythical thing that existed before.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that's exactly what it was. And then it sort of like fell into my lap, and I was like, that sounds really cool. I would love to do that.
I gotta say yes to this. And then obviously it's like, you know, you played in a lot of bands prior to, you know, Intronaut, that kind of, you know, from the way that I always saw you approach your bands, it was very, you know, like I said before, it was very practical. You did it. When I say practical, as far as like, you never were, you didn't have those like grandiose expectations of what you were doing. And even still to this day, like when I see the fact that you're putting out a new Intronaut record, I'm just always like, oh, rat. Like, and it's not like I forget that Intronaut exists, but it's just like, you guys, in my mind, it's like, you're a total like working class band, where it's just like, oh yeah, when we come home from tour, like, you know, we just kind of grind it out, take some temp jobs, like, you know, fill in the spots where we can. And then, oh, cool, like this other cool tour opportunity comes up and here we go. I mean, there's obviously more of a plan now because you have experience behind it. But, you know, that's just always like the perception that I've had, especially of you as a person for one, and then like how you've kind of always dictated your bands. Like, do you feel that's an accurate portrayal?
Definitely, but not because like I, you know, and maybe in my head I knew that stuff and I was actually being that practical, but like I also just didn't really know how to push a band, you know. I didn't really know how to like try, you know. Nobody ever like taught me how to do that. It still blows my mind when like young kids like just have it all figured out and like have like this plan. I guess that's what it is. Like, I never really had like some grand plan, you know, whether not even for necessarily like being really rich or successful playing music. Like, I just didn't know how to plan this stuff out, you know.
Well, yeah, you always struck me too. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned it. You struck me too as like a person where you're creatively engaged, but you could kind of care less about the way that the business operates. Is that true?
It's not that I could care less.
Okay.
Because I do care, you know. I'm just not good at it. I'm just right. Not
adaptable. Okay. Okay. There.
And like, I still get like scolded by our manager all the time, you know, for like how lazy I am with like our merch store and stuff. It's like, I don't know. Like, that's just, I just don't think about that stuff in like a.
It doesn't come natural to you.
It doesn't come naturally to me. That's
yeah.
What
yeah. No, I totally. I there are. Because I think every band has those like that, like one, maybe two people, if you're lucky, that are kind of like the sort of brains in regards to like, okay, this is the way we sort of structure things. And then obviously you need to have the people that are clearly creatively talented and kind of, you know, can put us on together and do all that sort of stuff. But it's like, it's hard when you have too many people leaning towards one side of either the left or right brain, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's definitely something that Intronaut, yeah, I mean, I'm the one in charge of all that shit. For Intronaut. So like, we're just doomed from the beginning.
Right, right.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And something that I'm sure that you guys have noticed as well throughout, you know, Intronaut's career, I've always defined you as a band's band as well, where you guys, and this is what I define a band's band as, where it's like, you guys are all cool, you're likable, you're easy to hang out with. So because of that, bands want to tour with you. And on top of that, you're obviously like, they enjoy listening to your music as well. And so that affords you opportunities that, like, oh, well, you know, Intronaut may not, you know, sell a ton of tickets in, you know, these markets that we're touring to, but the fact that they're cool dudes and we really like their band kind of outweighs that. Is that an accurate representation of where you guys feel like you sit in?
Yeah, honestly, yeah. I do honestly believe that Intronaut is probably one of the most fun bands you could ever tour with. like not even like just to stroke myself, but like we are like a fun group of guys.
Yeah.
A lot more fun than a lot of bands that we've had a tour with.
Right.
But it, you know, we've met a lot of fun bands. I don't know. Like, I feel like that's what we're out there to do, you know, at the end of the day, is have a good time. And a lot of our opportunities have come from that too, I think, you know, like just from us being us, like, you know, we got tour offers from, like, you know, the Tool tour or like Mastodon. Those were just from, like, you know, those guys like being like, what about Intronaut? It was not like the managers sitting around going like,
yeah, well, here's a marketing plan. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Who submitted the nicest looking marketing plan for us? It was just like, no, let's get Intronaut on this shit. Like, that'll be, you know, because they're rad.
Right. And it's like, yeah, it's like stylistically, it makes sense. Like, that's, you guys have definitely been able to carve like a really cool niche within that. You know, idea of, for lack of a better term, it's like, I call it artistic metal, where it's like, oh yeah, it's not, you know, you're clearly not Judas Priest, but you're still heavy, and there's a progression behind what you're doing. But it's cool that you guys have been able to experience that, because I think that some bands, and because you've been able to kind of like build on your popularity, it's cool to see where you're at now, because I think some bands that fall into that sort of like band's band genre, like are just completely disregarded. Like, they're just not, you know, they no one really likes them. You know, they're just kind of like, bands like them, but they never really translate to an audience anywhere, you know? And I think you guys have kind of been able to eschew that over time, which is good. So you're not just like, oh yeah, that band's on that tour again? Fuck.
Yeah, it is kind of a fluke, I will say. Like, we've actually, like, maybe there's just been enough touring that, like, we have just actually, like, won over, you know, a modest amount of fans.
The fact that it's like, okay, you may not have enjoyed us the first two or three times you've seen us, but it's like, yeah, at some point it'll kind of just like click and make sense.
Yeah. I mean, we've also been around 10 years, you know, like, and we're just now able to like go out and headline for like pretty small, you know, like nothing crazy, you know.
Right. Yeah. It's like you could play, you know, whatever, 100 to 200 people in major markets, and you guys are like, that's cool. That's a good tour. We're fine with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, like, also back to that band's band thing, you know, I feel like a lot of our fans are, it's like, it's really like a bunch of, I don't know how to word it, but it's like looking at a bunch of me's, you know, like five years ago. It's like,
okay.
kids who are like in bands and like really into just like the music part of it, you know. It's like we don't have like groupies. We just have like a 24-year-old guy who comes up and wants to talk about fucking time signatures.
You know, right, right. That actually leads perfectly to another question I was going to ask, where it's like something that I find so, you know, for me, just as a fan of the style of music that you guys play and the kind of, you know, whatever, the loose genre that you guys fit in, is people really, really, really concentrate on, like you were saying, the musicality and like the, you know, how you create what you create. But I always get frustrated where it's like, there's clearly emotional context to what you guys are doing. And I feel like that totally gets overlooked, like from either what you're putting out lyrically, what you're putting out aesthetically. I think a lot of it is just like, oh, I'm just focusing on the music and that's it. Where like clearly that's like the most important component of a band. I get it. I'm not stupid. But there's an emotional resonance, especially for it's like for where people like you and I have come from, where it's like, you know, like you mentioned, you see a band like Dystopia. Clearly there's emotion put behind the agenda and the music they're trying to have. And I think that all gets kind of looked at the same, but whereas people just look at you guys as you're really talented at music, you know?
Yeah.
Does that either get frustrating for you, or do you ever have, you know, kind of find yourself having to back it up and be like, okay, like maybe we should focus on, you know, not just solely the music, but like this other contextual stuff as well.
Well, I don't know. I feel like it's starting to change a little bit. Like with the last couple records, I feel like there are more people who are, because they recognize that the more emotional side, you know, the emotional payoff, you know, that's there if you like wade through the, you know, all the like musicality of what's going on. But, you know, like a couple records ago and like from early on, like, yeah, it was just all about like the, you know, the technical aspect, or mostly about that, you know, that people appreciated. But, you know, now I think with the last records being a little bit like less just all about brutality and technicality, it's attracting different kinds of people as well as like the music nerds, you know. So it's, I guess, kind of, I'm happy that anybody likes our band for whatever reason. Wow.
you're not gonna be you as a person, I know you would never be frustrated at that, like at the fact that a person would like your band, but the like just I guess what you know music to be, it's like, you know, clearly punk emotion, like so much is tied up into that, and it's like when it gets lost, it's kind of like, oh yeah, well I mean, it's cool you're into the band, like I also sing about some cool stuff, like,
yeah. I mean, and I do think there are a lot of people that come to the shows now, and especially with the kind of bands that we've played with more recently, you know, it's like a lot of people that don't really understand like all of that, like where we're actually coming from, and, you know, like the more punk side of where Intronaut comes from, you know, which is kind of, I don't know, not, I won't say hard to deal with, but just kind of interesting to me and like interesting to like reflect on sometimes.
That's true. That's a really good point, because I definitely do think that there's an element, like I remember when I first started working at Century Media, and coming from the background that I've come from, which is obviously similar to what you came from, of a metal band is not used to doing a van tour. Like that's just a reality, like especially if they're coming over from Europe, and it's like, I just remember like having these conversations with bands and bands managers being like, okay, we need a nightliner, we need a bus, and it's just like, dude, you can draw like 75 people in the States, do you know how to just like kind of, you know, grind it out, like just do that. And it's like, I think it's interesting. I'm sure you guys have had to have a lot of like push and pull in regards to the fact that, you know, I'm sure all of you identify, you know, are identify with the punk ethos and the sort of DIY ethos, which doesn't necessarily always translate to a kind of more larger mainstream metal world.
I mean, it's nothing like super difficult to deal with. I just like sometimes you're on a tour and there's like an opening band who you know, who are getting paid shit, which sucks. It's like a completely different thing, but they have like a tour manager and like a sound guy and all this shit. It's just like, what are you doing? You
know, a guitar string tech.
Yeah. I don't know if I've seen that yet, but yeah, I mean, like things like that. It's like, you know, like we didn't even bring like a merch person with us until like 2011. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, just cause I don't know, whatever. the way certain people approach it is just different than the way I always like understood it. And, you know, it is what it is, but it's just that sort of thing is like interesting to observe, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, it's something that is bred, like, it's honestly like part of your DNA. It's like, no matter what, you yourself couldn't unlearn the feeling. What it, like, okay, say 3 years from now, Intronaut is at the level where Tool's at. I'd be hard pressed to believe that you would still you would feel completely comfortable being like, oh, here's like my guitar and mic tech. Like, you would get used to it eventually. There would still probably be that like good year learning curve where it's like, yeah, you're playing, you know, whatever, 1,000 to 1,500 people, and you're like still going out there and doing your own stuff, and
right.
You know, you would, I think it would be hard for you to adjust immediately to that.
It wouldn't be the natural feeling there.
Right. Two last things I want to hit on before I let you go was, one, the in almost every interview or piece of journalism I've ever encountered with your band, everyone's so focused on, like, obviously categorization, and that, you know, obviously it makes it easy for people to kind of have an entry point to what you're doing. And the continual response that I've seen, you know, from you and the band in general, is that, you know, the idea of being reductive to your music, where it's like, well, I guess we're more than just this one thing, or more than these two things. Like, yeah, I guess we can kind of sound like Pelican, but there's other things that we sound like as well. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you've learned to, kind of adapt with and learn how to, like, answer those sort of questions, for lack of a better term, like, politically, so you're not, like, bumming anybody out to be like, yo, don't fucking call us post-metal again. Like, seriously, chill out.
Right. You know, I don't care anymore about, you know.
You've worn down.
Yeah, and like, I honestly don't, I wouldn't even begin to like try to like, you know, describe Intronaut as like just being one particular subgenre of music. You know, like, I don't even think about that, you know, at this point. So whatever, people have to use those labels, you know, so that, you know, you give people an idea of what they're about to get into. And so I get why all that happens, but, you know, but no, I don't really, none of it annoys me anymore.
But when it first started to happen, I'm sure there were some gut reactions you had to where it was like, stop calling us that. Stop doing that. And like, not in like a dick way, because I know you to be a very nice gentleman. I'm sure there's still that sort of like, you know, that immediate bile in the back of your throat where it's like, oh God, please stop doing that.
It's kind of, I mean, it's annoying when people like are really trying too hard to like figure it and like dissect all of it, you know, that kind of gets painful to listen to. I don't know. Sometimes when you get lumped in with certain styles of, you know, popular trends or whatever that you don't necessarily love yourself, that can be frustrating as well. Like when people lump us in with the, you know, whatever you call the new like gent thing, you know, the
right. Yeah, sure.
Like, and I get it, we tour with a lot of bands, few bands that, you know, are sort of like in lumped in with that too. I don't know.
No, I know. It's an impossible question to answer from that perspective, but it has to be where it's like, especially because the intention of creation is to never, you may be a part of a quote unquote scene, but it's never like you are setting out to sound like a particular band, especially at this point in your career. When you're 16 years old, all you want to do is sound like, you know, whatever, Discharge, Strife, like whatever your point of reference is.
Yeah. But
you grow out of that, and then further on in your musical life, and to be like, oh, so you guys are doing that thing now. I'm sure that's where the reaction of just like, oh, knock it off. That's probably where it I could see it, where you'd actually care, as opposed to just be like, oh, whatever, that's just another thing that someone's saying. But it's like, oh, we're not hopping on a trend now. Why do you think that now?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you just said.
Yeah,
a lot of times, like, I don't even like do the interviews anymore, I think, and maybe that's why it is not like fresh in my mind, just because of like questions like that, which are really like annoying to me. You know,
yeah.
I just can't even like.
Well, there. I mean, it's lazy too, because it's like, there, I mean, that is like, you know, stock question, you know, number seven on the list of,
yeah,
you know, oh, how do you feel like being a part of this thing? And then you just throw a musical styling at them. And it's like, what, I mean, what is a band supposed to say? Like, oh yeah, no, like we fucking hate all those bands in that genre and stop calling us that.
Yeah.
You're going to sound like the worst person ever.
Yeah, exactly. I start, you know, I found myself like starting to be kind of like sarcastic with like, you know, just lazy interview questions like that. And like eventually just decided that it was probably better just pass these on to somebody else in the band. You know?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a wise decision. Obviously what you're doing now with your, you know, your guitar company, was that born out of basically just you growing to know the instrument more and more? Or is that something that always you kind of always have been interested in?
I was definitely not always interested in it. I mean, it kind of came about again with like the whole like jobs in between tour thing, you know, like I was working in restaurants a lot after I worked at Century Media. And that's just like super competitive. And, you know, so you go on tour, you lose your job usually. If you're not like established somewhere. And I also just didn't like it at all. And so I kind of like had this, I've been thinking about it for a while. I was like, I need to like learn how to do something, you know, like I need to have like some kind of trade, you know, that I'm like qualified to do in life, because, you know, I was like 28 and it's like, I never went to like college or anything. You know, I got to figure something out because like, I have to like make, you know, I have to pay rent, you know? And I was just kind of like thinking about different things I could do. And like, I saw this class at MI that they have, you know, this like part-time short course on building stringed instruments, which was like pretty appealing. And so I decided to just go for that and started working in guitar repair shops. Mm. It was like 2009, I think. And so then that's how I got into all that. I mean, I kind of like knew some, you know, I knew how to like set up a guitar just, you know, out of necessity before that, I guess, from like being on tour and whatnot. But that's how I got into like doing that for a living. And so 2009, 2010, I started working just in different, like for repair guys in LA, like all over, working at different guitar stores as like the in-house repair guy, kind of getting my chops up, started building. I rented my friend Sean's garage out in Silver Lake and started like building, you know, building up the shop, like getting tools all compiled and set up, and started building guitars out of there. And it kind of just took off. I mean, it's not quite taken off just yet to where like, you know, I'm still like month to month with all this stuff, but.
But yeah, you're trying to build something obviously for the future that relates to not only the music that you create, but obviously gives you the, you know, sustainability in which you can still be connected to something you care about, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Well, that's cool. I like that idea. Like, I do think that there's a lot of, especially in the digital world in which most people live now, where it's like, there's a lot of people that don't know how to do stuff with their hands. I mean, honestly, I am 100% in that category. I've never been a person like, I know how to build Legos, but I don't know how to fix shit.
Yeah.
But that concept of like, I want to learn a trade is like, there is some sense of it being like hardwired in us as people, where it's like, I have to make something, whether it is making something digitally or whether it is making something like physically, there's that weird desire of just like, I have to do this. And since you're obviously a big social media person, I could easily see why you wanted to do something physical.
Just to balance it out.
Yeah, since you have millions of followers online, it's like you might as well.
Yeah,
you've already conquered the internet, so you might as well move on to guitars.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So basically, the concept is that you will like bands are just buying your guitars right now, or is it like you also have just like general, you know, general public people buying your stuff as well?
It's been some both. I mean, I guess mostly bands. I mean, the way I'm trying to go at it is like, I kind of have been offering them to bands that I know at like a kind of discounted rate, you know, bands who are going to tour. I mean, I guess the same kind of like concept that any, you know, bigger guitar company or any music gear company is probably going to use for like marketing, which is like, get your product into the hands of people who are going to be out there.
Seen, right?
Yes, yeah, where people are going to be watching them use this product. So I've been offering them to like bands that I know, you know, like Red Fang, the Atlas Moth, Death Heaven, bands like that. I've been like making them guitars at like a discounted rate. And then there's been some other like general public kind of people trickling in as well.
That's cool. I'm sure it's exciting.
It's really exciting. And it's been even more exciting since I like launched this website. Like it's been really, had a lot of people like hitting me up. It's like offering to like help me, you know, like people at like Decibel and, just other people in like the music business, kind of just offering advice on like marketing. Like this guy who works at Decibel, this guy Brian, who like books, he does like, I don't know, books some ads. And so, I mean, I'm sure he wants me to buy an ad in the fucking magazine, but he also worked for Fender for like 10 years as like the marketing guy. And he just called me up the other night and like talked to me for like an hour about like how the business works and stuff. And just like answered all these questions I had.
That's cool.
Yeah. Which is like, I'm like, thank you. You are awesome. Like, thank you very much. You know?
Yeah. Well, I think that obviously goes to show where it's like, you know, anytime you can get depressed about the idea of like how fractured, you know, musical communities are, there's still that semblance of like a person that's been involved for a long time. Like that community grows ever closer, you know, it's like people just kind of like, you know, lift each other up and support each other because you're like, oh dude, you're kind of a lifer. You're kind of into this for a long time. Like you're not going anywhere. So why should we A, not know each other, and B, how can we help each other?
Right. Really cool and inspiring too. You know, makes me just want to, you know, if they want to keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate the time, Sasha. Thanks for hanging out. It's been fun.
Yeah, for sure, man. Thank you.
All right, there you go. There is Sasha. Hopefully you learned a little bit about him, the guitar company he runs, and the band, and ultimately just the journey that we all take in this weird independent music world. So anyways, for more information on the show, visit 100wordspodcast.com. Next week will be this is what I like to call a little spotlight show, where there's a band that I feel needs recognition, needs your support and understanding. It's a band called Moose Blood from the UK. A person in that band will be appearing on the show next week. And the producer is Tom Richfield. And visit propertyofzach.com. And that's it. You have a spectacular day, week, whenever you're listening to this. And I look forward to speaking to you next week. Be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.